Hello, I'm Maura Gamble and welcome to the Sense Making in a Changing World podcast, a project of the Permaculture Education Institute. I invite you to join me each week in conversation with leading permaculture-related educators, thinkers, activists, authors, designers and practitioners to explore the kind of thinking and action we need to navigate a positive and regenerative way forward, to myceliate possibilities and share ideas of what a thriving one planet way of life could look like. My guests offer voices of clarity and common sense. This conversation is the final in my International Women's Day series, celebrating amazing contributions of inspirational women leaders. This week, I'm joined by Ansima Kasinga Rolanda, an extraordinary 21-year-old woman who I've worked with closely for many years. She studied with me here at the Permaculture Education Institute and then apprenticed as a teacher across East Africa with Bemaruki Basimwa Dasabi, sharing permaculture widely through a range of programs. Rolanda is based in Nakavale Refugee Settlement, where with her family she fled to as a teenager. Ongoing violence in her home country of Democratic Republic of Congo made it too dangerous to stay, and she doubts whether she'll ever be able to go back. Rolanda is the most courageous, positive and inspiring 21-year-old woman I know, and I know you're going to love listening to this story of hers. Before, however, we head into this conversation, I'd like to first acknowledge that I'm recording this episode from my hand-built solar-powered studio here in beautiful Gubbi Gubbi country, surrounded by my permaculture forage gardens in a permaculture village. The Sense Making a Changeable podcast is a project of the Permaculture Education Institute. We teach permaculture design, teaching and livelihood skills online to people in six continents, who in turn localise and enrich it and find appropriate ways to apply planet care ethics of earth care, people care and fair share wherever they are. Rolanda is one of those people, and we've shared hundreds of scholarships to young refugees and people living in the global south. Remember to subscribe to the Sense Making a Changing World podcast on your favourite podcast app, share it freely and leave us a five-star review and lovely comment, because it really does help people to find our podcast. All right, well, let's turn now to my conversation with Rolanda. Hi, Rolanda, and welcome to the Sense Making in a Changing World show. I'm so delighted that you're joining me here today, because we've been working together for many years across the planet, and we've talked in many different forums, haven't we, from permaculture forums, in the Lush offices in London, virtually, and often through the Permaculture Education Institute. And I really wanted to invite you to come and join me on the Sense Making the Changing World show to talk about the work that you do and let people know how it works, what you do, how permaculture has been benefiting your community and how it's evolved your ideas into what you'd like to do now. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to have met you and grow my career into permaculture. And I'm really so happy for everything that I have accomplished up to now. And I'm looking forward to doing more and improving a lot, personally and professionally, and my community too.
So tell us a little bit about where you are and how did we first come to meet?
Yeah, sure. Well, it was in 2021 when I met you. I was working with a CBO here in Nakivale, and we had a course of permaculture. So I met you like that, and I started doing the online permaculture design course. And yeah, that's how we met, particularly. So we started talking, and I had to like start doing my practical permaculture apprenticeship with Bemaruki. And yeah, here I am now.
So tell us a bit about Nakavale, where you live now, and how many people are there, a little bit about like what is daily life like there, and how did you come to be there?
Well, I'm a Congolese by nationality. I'm from the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm here. I'm a refugee. I fled war, actually. And I'm happy that I'm here, because I know there are many who would like to be here, but they don't know how to come, or they don't have the means to come this side. So personally, I feel lucky to be here. And well, the way I came, it was a little hard. I was living into war, and sometimes growing up there was like war was something like normal. We used to take it normal. Like, if we hear gunshots, it's normal. It was not so scary anymore. The only thing that was scary is seeing neighbors dying, disappearing, and you can't do anything about it. And you just live thinking maybe tomorrow will be your time. So yeah, it was a hard way to live. But thank God I'm here. And I never knew there could be a place where there wouldn't be gunshots all the time and people killing each other or all the things that I've seen before. But here it is.
Roland, that's such a heart-wrenching story. It's a story that is a similar story for many hundreds of thousands of people. How many people are in Nacuvale?
Well, we are 171,000 and more. Yeah, from the last count, actually, in Nacuvale refugee camp.
And so more people are coming regularly across.
Yeah, more people coming. And beside, in Uganda alone, we have like 11 refugee camps. And yeah, there are people going into all the camps. It's like when you ask for information and you find someone, and that someone directs you to where they know. So we just dispersed in all the camps.
And I don't know if you can answer this question, but have you got a sense that you'll ever be able to go back to the Democratic Republic of Congo, or are you looking to go somewhere else, or is this now your home? It's a settlement as opposed to a camp, and that's different, isn't it? A camp is different from a settlement.
Well, that's a little bit hard question to ask, because sometimes the need comes to feel like I would like to be with the people I knew before. They're my family. I grew up with them. Being here is good because I came with my direct family, but I have friends in Congo. I have our larger family. My grandparents are there and my aunts are there and many people in the family are there. We just talked to a few of them who happened to get a chance to use a phone and they contact us. But personally, it's kind of hard to envision going back to the same life that I lived. I would wish that the situation changes and I be with the people I love again. So, but I love it here and it's somehow hard. I would like to grow also, go somewhere else and experience life. This is a camp and yes, I enjoy life here. I would like to grow here, but I would also like to experience life, not only here, but somewhere else in the world. I would like to travel and see how other people live in all the other parts of the world. Well, I like my life here. It's not that I'm not satisfied, but I'd wish to move and experience life differently from the life I'm living now.
Well, that was a very great answer to a very difficult question, so thank you, Roland. Are there limitations on you traveling as a refugee? Is there limitations, or can you travel out of the camp easily?
Well, there is only one limitation. My refugee document does not allow me to go back to Congo, actually. So even if I may feel the need to go back there sometimes and meet the people I knew before, I can't do that. So I'll never go back to Congo again on legal terms. So I have a passport, and this passport is able to take me anywhere else in the world, except from where I'm from. So basically I can't go back there anymore.
Gosh, that's hard. So yeah, we managed to help you get the passport when we hoped you were able to come to the UK and travel with me there to travel to different places and permaculture projects and amazing conferences. but we weren't able to get your visa in time. So hopefully that might work another time, and hopefully the passport might be an opportunity that someone else listening to this might actually hear and find a way to help you travel and journey around the world. That would be phenomenal. So just tell me a little bit about, just staying on the refugee context, just for a bit, just to help people get a sense of why we've been working together on permaculture. What's the food situation like? So how do people get food in Naka Valley? What support do you get, and how much do you need to grow, and how expensive is food? Has it changed? Is the impact of climate change having any impact on you? Like all of those kind of questions all bundled in together.
Yeah. Well, actually, when I reached here in 2018, we used to receive food. We used to get per person like 12 kilograms of food, 3 kilograms of beans, and 9 kilograms of maize, and half a liter of cooking oil and salt, and also some porridge flour. So we were getting that. And to a big family like ours, it was being of really great help to get us going. But with time, it changed, and they stopped bringing food. Now only the new refugees receive food, those who have not been established yet. And for now, all of us, old refugees, we receive 13,000 a month, which is not more than $4. And that is the money we receive for sustainability, for everything we need, like food, water, so all the needs basically, and even education of children. And this is a hard situation. And my family receives 13,000, but there are families that do not receive anything. In last year, they did a check, and they had to group people. So my family receives 13,000. Those families with people with severe sickness or people with disabilities, they receive a little bit more, around 20,000. And there are others who don't receive anything. And so it's like hard for all of us. Even the 20,000 for people with disabilities, like $5. So it's still not even enough for them. So that's how it is. When we reach here, we get a tarp and timbers for building. So we like make mud bricks, and we put the tarp on top with some trees to hold it together. And that's how we start life. We also receive a few kitchen utensils and some mats too, and a blanket. So that's all we start with. We start life with. And it's somehow hard because most of us have been having like good lives when they came from before the war disrupts everything, and it's hard to like start from nothing or from zero. And yeah, with that situation, people have to rely on agriculture because first of all, the language barrier is there and you won't get a job anywhere. We have to rely on growing food. And the food we grow helps a lot, but with the climate change issues and these rising temperatures, it's somehow hard to grow enough food throughout the year. So people have to like cope up with it and grow food during the rainy season. But when it's too sunny, they won't grow food, and that's a hard situation for everyone. So during these times, it's so hard. There is a lot of disease going on, malnutrition, and even robbery, which also increases. Because, yeah, people, when you don't have anything to eat and you don't know how to get something to eat, then some people try to find it in ways that are not kind.
You studied nutrition, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the state of nutrition in the camp? What seem to be the main issues, and how have you found that integrating permaculture and kitchen garden programs has been able to help you to address that?
Nutritionally, the problem that we have in the camp is that most of us do not have like the chance to have two or three meals a day. So big part of us, we have just one meal a day. And also that meal is repeated, like the same meal of today is the same meal you will eat tomorrow. Most of times it is beans and posho from maize and some greens for those who got it. So it's basically eating the same meal every day and not having enough food. But when we integrate permaculture and nutrition together, we learn how we can grow more food, like we can grow different kinds of food in the same garden and learn how to like have mix in it. We like mixing food, not eating the same food today, tomorrow, and the next day. So you don't have the same kind of nutrients running in your body all the time. And also maybe learning to reduce the malnutrition by having people grow more food in their small space that they were using since before. So they will be like getting two meals a day. Yeah, and it helps to those who have started using the method. Well, we have very many people in the camp and we can't reach everyone at the same time. But we are very proud that when we reach to a community and we train like 30 families, those 30 families are going to help their neighbors to also integrate. Because when they see a change, they're going to learn from each other. So, yeah, actually, there is some changes happening from the people we have trained. Yeah,
that's great. Can you tell me a little bit about the food that you get, the maize? Where does that come from? Is that grown in Uganda or is that get imported? Is that from the World Food Programme? Who supplies the maize for you?
Well, it's imported. It's from the World Food Programme. So, well, we no longer receive it. We used to receive it, but it was being imported from overseas. I don't know where. Some people used to say it's from South America or something like that, but I'm not so sure. Yeah, most of times they don't buy from local people. And even if they would, maybe we wouldn't have that much food to have contracts with the UNHCR and WFP. Some people have maize here in Uganda. So I don't know, but it was being imported most of times.
And so is the kitchen garden idea, the permaculture kitchen garden idea, something that when you show it to people, they go, yes, that's going to help us, that's going to make sense, people want to do that? Or is it something that is challenging to do? In what ways are you finding that it's challenging to help set up local food programs?
Well, as I said before, when we reach here, we don't have that much of resources and we have to rely on the small space that we are given for gardening. There are so many organizations that work in the camp and some of them, they just want to reach to people and have their reports done and they won't do something big to change. So many people like get disappointed with some people like that. So when there is something new coming, even if you are genuine with some village, they just think it's the same story. Yeah. We have organizations like that. They are registered, they have big money. But the people who are implementing on the ground, they don't do the thing the way it is expected to be done. So they just go meet people, get their reports done, and that's all. And sometimes when we go to implement, it's kind of a bit challenging for people whose trust have been broken by others, but we try to do our best. Like, we are the same. We are all refugees and we are just helping each other. And we try to build our own reputation. And to build in this reputation, we have to do everything right. And we have to make everything in a way that we don't hurt anyone. Because, you know, with all the traumas that we have been living with people who had things of their own, lying them about something small gets them really bad. So that's one of the problems we face. And another one, which is not a problem, but it is something good. It's like we learn together. We have so many different nationalities. We have so many different cultures, and every people have their own way of doing their things from their own countries. So when we meet them and we explain them our methods, they also explain us theirs. And sometimes we have to grow the conversation, like they explain us why theirs is good and why it was working, and we have to explain them why this method is also good, and we are in a different place and a different climate, and it helps, and people get to like understand, and we also learn from them. We learn from different methods, and it's like when we are growing food, there are some countries that don't eat a kind of food and others do eat these legumes and others don't eat this. It's like the food to one group of people is not food to another one. So when you meet them, it's like you have to try to understand what they want, what they like, and how they live.
So it sounds to me like the gardens and the trainings are more than just about the food. I've heard other people saying, in a way, sometimes the permaculture training programs are peace building. You've talked about the training programs with children being about helping to heal trauma. So tell us a little bit about the different kind of programs that you run with your friends and colleagues in your part of the camp.
Yeah, sure. The projects, we have many projects going on for now. At first, it was just implementing permaculture gardens to the community to improve the food situation. Because after I had my apprenticeship, when I came back, it was like the second round of COVID. And that's where I started. Even people who had secured some jobs for themselves were also at home and doing nothing to get their families going. And we didn't have like more money from the UNHCR to live on. And the roads were closed and no people bringing in food from outside or selling your products to outside people. So it was a hard situation and we had to start implementing permaculture. During that time, I met people and we did a lot of gardens with people at home. And after that, we wanted to grow to add on what we were doing. So we started with the children's workshop, also including children into permaculture. So they grow knowing about the climate change and solution they can bring to our planet for it to continue thriving. And also reducing trauma, because, you know, when a child grows into an environment like where I grew up in, it kind of affects them and they don't feel at peace anywhere they are, because it's somehow hard. We used to like close the door so hard that even when someone is attacking from outside, they won't get in. It was like having to prepare ourselves for war every day, and that gets into children's psychology. So they will have to fear like everyone they meet on the roadside, because you never know who is the one who kills people at night. So with the children's workshop, we do games, we cook together, we learn a lot of stuff about permaculture, we have conversations, we tell stories, we invite people and elders who tell us stories from our ancestors and all this stuff. So this helps the children to integrate with other people in the community and to like develop kindness and love and passion, and to know they are safe to do what they want to do, because it's really hard to kind of shift from that kind of love to another one. Myself, I know I'm still healing. Sometimes it still comes back to me. Like when I'm sleeping at night and something passes outside, I just like wake up and I remind myself I'm safe where I am now. So I can't expect for a child to forget about it at once. So having the child integrate and learn from each other and play games helps them. We also have another one about pads, and this is about women's health and women's education. And we do sew pads, and we offer them to women and girls who need them in the community, because not everyone is able to buy a pad each month. With receiving few money, not everyone will be able. So most of times we find ourselves using anything that we get, and this has consequences to our health. Making reusable sanitary pads is like a great solution to that. We do as many as we can, and we reach as many people as we can with the support from the Ethos Foundation. And this is helping really many girls in schools and even out of schools and even women. So we pair this with learning and discussions and talks about women health, because this is a taboo topic, and most of girls here go get married without knowing anything how it works. So it's kind of sad, and we like pair it with some learning and talking, learning, sharing. Everyone brings what they think they know, and we kind of help each other. We also use internet to find some solutions to questions that we don't know, but well, it goes well, and we motivating many women nowadays to kind of not rely on thinking being a refugee is like the end of their life, and all is remaining is just get married and do something else with their life. But they can still have their lives in hand, like they can still get like a scholarship and go study somewhere else. They can still learn skills and start life from there. Or they can give their lives to helping others like I did. And I'm happy with this, because before meeting you and starting the permaculture project, I did a lot of stuff. So I was a primary school teacher. I was selling legumes. I was going to a market of nationals, which is at like 6 kilometers from here. I would buy fruits and greens and come to sell them here in the camp all the time in the evening time. And I worked in a shop where I was selling and receiving just a little money at the end of the month. I did a lot of stuff just to get myself going, and it was not working. All the time I was feeling like something is missing. This is not my life. But since I'm doing permaculture, and I no longer think about myself alone, I think about the whole community. I take decisions depending on how is it going to help others too. And it's not about myself. I feel like I found my own happiness into this. And that's why I want to grow it. I don't want it to like sleep or just I want something big. I want to meet many people. I want it to grow even out of the camp and reach a lot of people. So that's kind of motivations we try to give to fellow women, so they can still also grab their chance to live and not stop living. We have arts projects, and these are to help teenager artists to kind of throw themselves into the world. We have many people here in the camp with different talents, with different knowledge, but they don't get the chance to show their work outside. And being an artist here, a painter, and expecting to make a living from that work here in the camp is hard, because while everyone is running to get something on the table, you will be expecting them to come and buy a painting. And it's very rare for someone to give money and buy a painting. So we try to help these young artists to the world. We like get commission of artworks from the ethos and we give them to draw and they get some money and the passion is not dying. It's
so
growing.
On that topic, dear listeners, on the Ethos Foundation website, and I'll put it in the show notes below, we have a spot where you can see some of the work of these artists and you can actually order your own commission. These artworks, they could be of a family portrait, of a landscape, of pets and animals. The artists that you work with are extraordinarily talented. Absolutely amazing. So I want to encourage everyone who's listening to this to get on and commission a piece of artwork. So that's one way of doing it. The other thing is that Rolanda and I have been talking about the possibilities of creating some kind of exhibition of the work that they're doing, the work that they love to do that's their own work, and maybe, you know, giving you the opportunity to purchase that work as well. So that way, you know, the artists have a capacity to actually generate an income doing this work and you get incredible artworks. The other thing that I wanted to mention too here is that you can help to sponsor kits of these washable sanitary pads to be made, because Rolanda's mum and a team are always sewing these up kits and actually taking them out and delivering them to groups of women and also to women in other camps. We were able to support them to go and get really good training how to make beautiful quality washable sanitary pads, and they have a fantastic enterprise going on, their own studio now where they're making these pads. How much would it cost to make one kit for one girl or woman? What would it take, and what do people get in one bag of things?
Well, in one bag of pads they get two liners. How can I explain that? It's I don't know how to explain it. Well, it's the liner is the part of the pad that absorbs the blood into it when you're wearing it. So it's the part that absorbs the blood, and they get three of those. They also get two shells, and the shells are the part of the pad that supports the liner to hang it on the underwear. It's like that because we think it's more hygienic, because this liner being washed is easier. All the blood is removed easily with the fabric that we make it with. And this shell, it helps just supporting it. And it also has waterproof fabric in it, just in case this liner gets full, so the blood won't go to the clothes. And it's also good because you can change the liner without changing the shells, just in case you are at school or in a trip. And we also provide a small bag, which is also waterproof. And if you change that liner, you can put it in there and it won't smell. Yeah. And it saves it well. And also you receive like two handkerchiefs for helping yourself with during the period when you are changing. You can put some water on it and just clean yourself without having to like bathe. And also another one just for yourself usage. When important, we also put in some underwears if we got them, but making the pad, these underwears aside, so we buy them when we get a chance to, and we just put them one or two when we are giving out the pads.
So the thing that really moved me about this project is recognizing that it's really hard, actually, as a woman in the camp, in the settlement, to address periods. And what happens to a girl if she doesn't have access to these kind of pads? What are the consequences of not having access to these kinds of things? What's the situation on the ground for people?
Well, not having access to pads goes with a lot of problems. First, they will need to like cope up with the blood because it will always come. They won't stop it. And they'll have to find like anything to use, and this will bring infections. when we were doing surveys in the village, some women told us when they're on a period and they have nothing to use, and they don't want to cut their clothes because maybe they come with just two clothes from their country, and they won't cut one of them to use it for period. So they will just dig a small hole into the ground and sit there for the whole day. And while they are sitting there, the blood will be just dropping into the hole. It helps some to cope up with the situation, but it also comes with a lot of diseases, infections, because imagine just sitting on the ground with wearing nothing, just covering yourself up so no one sees it, and you have to sit there for the whole day. And if you are washing clothes, then the clothes will be just there and you'll be doing all your houseworks around. And it's hard. And some of us, they make dried banana leaves. They take banana leaves and they like pound it, and it becomes a little like cotton. Yeah, it becomes somehow soft so it doesn't hurt. And they're going to use that during the periods.
I think this project that you've started here is really important, as well as the physical pads that helps the girls and the women, but the knowledge and the information that you share and the space to have a conversation about these issues. And at the same time, I've heard you also talk about that you actually share nutrition and talk about maybe permaculture ideas as well while you're there addressing, you know, like the personal permaculture. It's a wonderful program that you do. It would be great to get some more support for you and your team to be able to share this out and teach more people how to make pads in other camps, so that then it can keep on keeping on. I think it's just fantastic. I'd like to move on to another project that we've just been chatting about, and that's the project of the murals. Do you want to just chat a bit about the plan for the murals in Nakavali?
Sure. Well, this is an idea that came up when we were having a conversation with the artists, and I was like, how can we use arts and bring out the permaculture message to the community? Well, we have very many people here. We have more than 90 villages, different villages in the whole Naki Valley. So how can we get all these people know about permaculture and learn something with arts? And that's where the murals project came in. There were some murals that we did before with Nakivart about COVID, and they were helping people learn about it. And so we say doing murals about permaculture, like big pictures on the roadside in the village where people pass most of the times, is a great idea. We like paint something, a mural, which explains a particular something in permaculture. Like, for example, we could paint a mural that explains about composting, and anyone who passes there understand what is composting and how they can compost in their own house without having to reach to us or us having to go to their village. They will be easy to understand. We know part of our population did not go to school, not get the chance to go to school. So even reading and writing is hard for them. So they will be painting where anyone who sees the picture will understand what is going on, and they can do this for their own, in their own home. They will also be our contact. So if someone needs a question or has a question to ask or needs something to be explained, or they want a training in their village, they can easily contact us and we reach out to them. And if we get support from the Ethos Foundation, then we can be able to reach many people. Some of them don't know yet that we exist and that we are doing the work. So it will be a really big project to help everyone around to know about permaculture.
Yeah, I think that's great. And then you can, you know, you can take really good quality pictures of your wall drawings and then have them as digital images that can be sent out using WhatsApp or projected up onto a wall somewhere else, so you can and talk about them as an educational tool. I think there's so much benefit from this. So we're hoping to find the funds for that, for you to get that started really soon. So, you know, the art and the women's issues and permaculture and kitchen gardening and food security and peace gardening and, children's play spaces, all of these things woven together. It's like it's such a beautiful big picture that you have been weaving by listening into what it is that people need. What is it that is moving in the local community? And these are multiple dimensions of how permaculture can land in different ways. What are some of the things that you're hoping to move towards now? Like what are you dreaming of things that you can create and activate in your community now?
Well, the first thing is having a space where all these activities are done, where people can search and find us, where anyone can come and find something practical they will learn from, and when someone can come with a question and learn from. So we are planning to have a center. So we already got a garden, and we need support to build. And this place would be having all these activities going on.
So, Roland, it's just extraordinary the work that you're doing, and it's always been a delight to work with you and to hear about what you're doing. And to know that, just to have this insight into what you're doing there and different ways of applying permaculture. You know, I don't know if you realize how much people are learning from you sharing out what you're doing, where you are, and the approach that you're taking. You've inspired and uplifted so many people with your work and really given people so much hope and possibility, like that change is possible. And I don't know if you hear that enough. So I just wanted to make sure I said thank you and to recognize your extraordinary work. I wonder whether you could tell us a little bit about where you see some of the key things that you'd like to work on to help young people now, because you've created such a network where you are and a global network of support. What do you feel are the things that are really missing for young people in the camp that you can try and activate and that you can call out to our global community to support you to do?
Thank you so much. To that question, I would say education is still a big challenge for our young people here. Well, we haven't been able to tackle that really hard and be able to help them. Most of us, when we come from different countries to here in Uganda, we have to start education on their way of doing. We won't continue studying the way we were, and this change makes us lost. First, the language and the whole program issues. And you find someone who was already in secondary school being sent back to primary school to start learning again with young students, and that's hard. And also, even after when they finish the primary school and they now want to go to secondary school, it's still so hard because we have only one secondary school here with the whole population over 171,000 people, over that number, and we only have one secondary school. So there are many youth who kind of drop out because it's competitive and you have to gain it to go to secondary school. And if you don't gain it, then you have no many other options to do. So having a way of supporting these youth grow into the world again and have their chance is really something that could make a big difference, because some of them have to apply for scholarships, and these are not so common. Yeah, not everyone gets to find a scholarship, and you may find it and it's just for 1 year. You go and study, and when you are finished just secondary one, you go back again at home, and it did not help that much. So earlier I was talking with Morag about an idea of creating job opportunities to these youth, throwing them to the world, introducing them to the internet world so they can find their own possibilities of learning. I have been a student in an online university. I learned about nutrition online, but many of our youth do not know that possibility exists. So having a way to introduce technology to the camp and let these youth learn about it and use it for their own good is like a big way of supporting them to continue the life courses. And doing this, maybe we need a few things to get started. We won't just do it. Like, we need like materials, computers and internet, and maybe one or two trainers who will be there to train these youth and equip them with basic knowledge that they need to also start using the internet for their own good, like searching for scholarships, like studying online, like doing freelancing, searching jobs all over the world, because our world for youth is like it ends here. When you don't live Naki Valley, you can't do something out of Naki Valley. While I'm here and I'm talking to all of you because I got this opportunity to like be here. Many of us have the same knowledge like me. They're even more intelligent. They can even do bigger and better than me, but they don't have this opportunity. So introducing more youth to technology will be a great way to make a change into our community. And it won't help only them, it will help the whole community, their families, and also it will change lives. Their life course will not be the same as it would have been if they weren't introduced to another way of seeing their lives go on.
I think that's just such an extraordinary opportunity, as you're saying, because what you get to access in the world, all the information at your fingertips, because you understand how to use the technology, how to connect with global communities, how to get degrees, how to be part of networks. So whatever it is that you are actually interested in doing, you can start to find it and find a global community of practice and also find collaborators as well. I think that's such a fantastic idea, Roland, and it's definitely something, like you're saying, that comes out of knowing what's going on the ground. What is it that young people really need? And so, you know, having the digital access at the same time as having a kitchen garden, like you can do the both at the same time. You can have better food and digital understanding and, you know, make it one and the same. Just for our dear listeners again, I would love to let you know that any day and every day that you would like to support any of this work, the Ethos Foundation is open for donations. You can do a one-off donation, you could share a monthly donation, and we send always 100% of any of the funds directly to projects like Roland's. I think it's really interesting to know too that if you come to any of our masterclasses, film clubs, open days, which are all free, and you'll notice sometimes I say, would you like to donate to this? That money is also collected and 100% sent to projects like Roland's. And I take it upon myself through the Permaculture Education Institute to cover every single admin cost that's involved in any of this. And all of the work that I do or anyone else does is as volunteers. So you absolutely know that 100% is going to support the activation of projects run by people like Roland. So Roland and her friends are designing these projects and putting the funds where they know that it's needed and running programs that are rippling out, as you've heard. So please click on the link down below and read a little bit more or feel free to get in touch. And also, Roland, you might well notice that she's often on different events that we run. So you can come and have a chat with her too. I'm sure she'd be really happy to answer more questions that you have about anything that she's doing. Like I said before, Roland, it's a real honor to have a chance to speak with you today and the chance for you to talk more about just some of the projects that you've been involved in. I mean, the things that you've been doing over the last few years are extraordinary. How old are you again, by the way?
Yeah, I'm 21. I was 21 since December last year.
Yeah. So extraordinary what you're achieving. And I really want to celebrate your work and thank you for everything that you do and for being such a wonderful contributor to the global network of permaculture too.
Thank you so much for giving me this chance. Well, you were one of the people who saw something big in me, and myself, maybe I didn't see it. You gave me the opportunity. I didn't do any big interviews to prove you that I could do something. I didn't have any experiences to prove you that I could do something, but you gave me the opportunity. You trusted in me, and it also made me trust in myself. And now I'm helping people and I'm helping myself, and I love the life I'm living. And I did some efforts to reach here, but I owe most of it to you. You made me study. You gave me the opportunity. You funded the projects, even if some of them were sometimes stupid. Not everything was a great idea, but now it's helping a lot of people. And I'm so thankful. I know it's been a long journey, and there is still a very long journey ahead. And yeah, I hope to do that too.
Yeah. We're not going anywhere, so I look forward to collaborating with you in lots of different projects, and hopefully one day actually come and visit you over there, and you know, maybe put your passport to some use and go places together.
Yeah, sure.
That was the plan, everybody.
I'm really sad I missed the last one. I was so waiting to meet you finally, but well, it didn't happen. But we still have a lot of chances.
We do still have a lot of chances, so let's try and find a way to make that happen. Thank you, everyone, for your patience through some of the glitchiness of this, but that is the nature of the internet that Rolanda has, and she does extraordinary things with the access. So it's all solar powered as well, isn't it? You've got the power on and the internet, and you do extraordinary things with that capability. So thank you again, Rolanda. Much love to you and all your family. I look forward to catching up with you again soon. Thanks for being part of the show today.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Sense Making in a Changing World. Please check out the show notes below to find links to Rolanda's work, her Instagram, and where you can book an art commission with a young refugee artist. And also check the notes too for where you can find details of all of our permaculture programs and courses, our YouTube and blog, and also free masterclasses and film clubs. And make sure you're signed up to hear news and updates, and come and join us at the Permaculture Education Institute to learn practical skills for designing and teaching permaculture and making a good livelihood while living a permaculture-inspired, one planet way of life. Until next time, see you later.